UCR podcast.
It's news we've been waiting for a good while now. We finally have the AC/DC tour dates in hand for North America. The band's set to play their first proper U.S. shows since their one-off performance at the Power Trip Festival October of 2023. For many fans, it's going to be the first chance to see the group with Brian Johnson here stateside in a decade. Guys, AC/DC has announced 13 stadium shows. Brian Johnson's going to be 77 as they take on this workload starting in April of next year. It's not hard to imagine that this could be the final tour for AC/DC, at least with Brian at the helm. So with that in mind, what do you guys want to see from these shows if this is the final run?
Well, the good thing about AC/DC is that for the last almost 50 years now, when we talk about what we want from them and what we get from them, it's kind of more of the same. And I say that in the most complimentary way possible. I think the floor for a tour like this is I want them to just go out, and I want Brian Johnson to sing with the same fire that he had at the Power Trip Festival and in their European leg of this tour. I want Angus to be slinging those riffs. I want to see some cannons fire. I want to see some gongs getting banged, and I want a big rock and roll extravaganza like only they can deliver.
Yeah, I mean, we're not looking for them to do a jazz-inflected tour or an acoustic segment. What Brian said is exactly right. We want more and more, and all that's really left is to quibble about which of their 60 great songs they should play on any given night.
Yeah, and I mean, we each chose our dream set list as part of an article that listeners can check out at the UCR website. I do like the idea that Brian and Corey put forth as far as playing the Back in Black album in full, and as I said in my comments in that article, like, it would be a cool way to bring Brian's time with the band full circle as Back in Black turns 45. But guys, that's a tough card to play because you're basically putting a big marker down on about half of the set list that AC/DC is going to perform on the night. That's something that I discovered when I was putting my dream set list together, is that, like, you put that album in there and it's like, if we consider that they are going to play potentially a 22 song set list, that doesn't leave a lot of room for you to play with when it comes to, you know, putting in some fun stuff in addition to the Warhorse songs that it feels like they're going to have to play. But I think, Matthew Wilkening, that's why I like the approach that you took, which you kind of really took the dream set list part of the assignment on, because I thought that your set list had really interesting pacing and just seemed like a lot of fun. And that's kind of the idea of doing something like that, is like, how possible is this set list? I looked at your set list. I thought it was possible. They could do it, but it's also just a lot of fun. So, I mean, I would love to see them shake it up in any combination of the form of what you put down.
I mean, someone's going to be disappointed that they didn't get this or they didn't get that. And it's they might be a better candidate to do what Metallica's doing right now with the two,
absolutely,
two shows a night. But as you can see by this tour schedule, 13 dates, about 4 days apart each time. So it's clear that age is a factor or a consideration. I would imagine a lot of that is about Brian's voice. Totally understandable. But I'm guessing two night stands in any city is not going to work. And that's why we're doing stadiums instead of arenas.
Yeah, you have absolutely the right thing as far as like the Metallica example, because that was something that I kind of made a note about, just like how much a rotating set list would come in handy, something that would allow them to put in different things from albums from both the Johnson era and the Bon Scott side of things. On the Bon side of things, like, I would love to see them dig a bit further into the bluesier side of the catalog. Like, it's stunning to me, guys, that they've never taken a crack at songs like Night Prowler. Like, there's what we saw at least a little bit when Axl Rose stepped in and they kind of mixed a few more things from the Bon side of things into the set list was just, and I said this to Brian earlier today as we were talking about things, it's amazing to me, like, AC/DC is not the only band that is like this, but AC/DC is one of those bands that leaves an amazing amount of their catalog on the sidelines that they could be playing. And one of you two, as we were kind of, you know, talking around the proverbial UCR water cooler this morning, said quite well that they could basically put together, and we've seen this, they can put together any set list, any combination of songs. And because it all kind of fits in the sound same realm, sounds very similar, you can put any of it together. It's going to be a good night out at the stadium. It's going to be a great show. But like, I can't think of a ton of bands outside of AC/DC and a few others where they just leave so much on the table set list wise. I mean, Brian, I know that you can certainly identify with that general thought.
Yeah, it's a tough one because AC/DC is a band, when you look at their first seven, maybe eight albums, I think a lot of hardcore fans would say that they're pretty much all top to bottom stone cold classics. And they're not a band that necessarily trafficked in radio hits. They've got plenty of fan favorites and more popular songs by any, you know, reliable metric. But I think that part of their set list is always going to be dedicated to, quote unquote, I hesitate to even use the phrase deep cut, but songs that are, you know, less popular than Thunderstruck or Back in Black. So I like the approach that Matthew took in his set list, where, yeah, it is kind of something that we see in Metallica's set list logic this time around, too. It's finding, you know, 5 to 7 songs within the set list that kind of have a certain role that they're playing. And those songs could be swapped out with maybe a different one from a same album or something that is aesthetically a little bit similar. Whereas, like you said, the approach that I took, where if we just put an entire album's worth of music in the middle of the set list, yeah, you're getting rid of a lot of those random slots where you could fill, where you could, you know, replace one song with another. I think the approach that I was taking when I was looking at putting Back in Black in the middle of the set and kicking it off with a bunch of Bon Scott era songs was maybe more in line with what Iron Maiden is promising to do on their upcoming tour, where they're going to focus on their first 9 albums primarily. I think that certainly no one's arguing that the Brian Johnson era of AC/DC is bad by any stretch of the imagination. There's plenty of classics across that whole batch of albums. But I do think a lot of fans also gravitate toward and yearn for a lot of those Bon Scott classics and deep cuts. So I think starting off with some Bon Scott early material, building up toward that apex with Back in Black, and then finishing off with a truncated sort of greatest hits volley at the end of a set would be a really interesting way to go.
I didn't disagree with what Corey said about how cool it would be to start off the night with the album first, you know, which gives you the ability to open up with Hell's Bells. Like, that's a pretty good play as well. You guys, obviously, Brian, most recently, you saw the Power Trip Festival performance in Wilkening. You've seen AC/DC a number of times over the years. Like, what do you guys think about just the general approach and pacing? And Brian, this goes to you as well, somebody that has made set lists. Like, what do you think about their approach to the way they like structure the set list in the shows that we have been privy to in recent times and, you know, going back?
Well, Power Trip was my first time seeing AC/DC. I feel very lucky because I never thought that I would get to see AC/DC. And I mean, I thought they came out swinging and I thought it was an excellent set list. I really didn't have any complaints about it in the moment or in hindsight. I think opening with If You Want Blood, You've Got It for the first time since, the first time ever as a show opener and the first time with Brian Johnson since 2003, I thought that was an amazing song to bring back after 20 years away. I think going right into Back in Black after that was a really cool move. Hits the crowd with the unexpected choice at the beginning and then go right into something warm and comforting and familiar. And from there, I think they did a good job of, you know, paying tribute to their different eras, different albums. And I thought that the set list had a really good logical flow to it. I was really happy to see some not quite as frequently represented songs in their set list, like Riff Raff, which I'm looking at notes now. Apparently, that was the first time they performed it with Brian. So that was a real treat. Given the Dog a Bone, some of those other Back in Black B-sides, I thought it was really great, top to bottom. Honestly, no complaints. And if they do end up going out on the road with a similar version of that set list, which I think we all know they're most likely going to do, I would be happy to see it again.
They might have the most songs that can work as show openers of any band out there.
Absolutely.
Think of 20 songs, you'd be like, oh, that's the perfect song to open an AC/DC concert with. To me, with their set list, most of it is just, it's like trying to build with exactly square blocks. They all fit together perfectly. You can move them around wherever you want. There's a couple things, you know, usually you do a bluesy song sort of towards the end, let Angus go crazy on the solo, and then, you know, Let There Be Rock is a big blowout. You got the cannons at the end, but until then, it's just kind of mix and match. You don't have to worry too much about where do we put the ballad or anything like that.
I think that's what was so fun about like putting these dream set lists together was that like they make it really easy to kind of like do like the armchair quarterback structuring of a set list, because it's just like, as you two have both kind of said, like there really are no wrong moves. It's like you can almost kind of feel yourself making a wrong move structurally as far as how they would normally do it. But it's like, as Wilkening said, it's like there are any number of perfect openers. And in that same way, I think it's like the same thing you get is because of how cool their song intros are. Like you can get to the end of one particular song, and if you picture dropping in the next song, sometimes it's just that intro of the next song that's just like, man, that's going to work. That's going to be killer. And they're not a lot of bands. I mean, maybe Judas Priest is kind of similar in the same way that like they have songs. I kind of think back to what you said, Brian, about their Power Trip set, about Judas Priest understanding the assignment. Like it's like their catalog is just well suited to just put together an all killer, no filler kind of set list. And that's kind of how I feel about AC/DC.
Yeah. I mean, again, I say this with the highest praise possible. There's something to be said, and there's a rare art to writing that many nearly identical three chord rock anthems. I don't know if there's any band that can do it as brutally efficiently as AC/DC. Not only do they have a ton of songs that could work as setlist openers, they've got a ton of songs that could function as openers or closers. When I was thinking about my setlist and trying to put some of their earlier tracks up front, songs like Whole Lotta Rosie, Highway to Hell, basically any of those really famous Bon Scott tracks, it almost felt weird to put them in the first half of the set, because it's like every single one of those songs, when they play it live, it's like being served a steak dinner with like a giant slice of chocolate cake afterwards. Every single song just hits that hard. It's like an exhaustingly exciting performance with each one. It would feel almost bizarre to put it up so early, but I'm confident that no matter where they put those hits in the set, they could still follow it up with something else equally exciting.
Wilkening, and you've seen AC/DC quite a few times. If we were to take the fantasy angle a bit further, like, is there a particular tour production that you'd love to see them revisit in some form, even if it's just like a particular stage prop or whatever it is, like a bit of an Easter egg for these upcoming tour dates?
No, the only thing I would say, and I don't mean this as any disrespect to the current lineup, but I wish I could go back in time and see a Bond show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same.
If that's obvious. But the set list, no, the stages are always fun, you know. The best show I ever saw was them in New York City at the Roseland, though, just with no stage show, because it was one of those, you know, lucky, when they just signed to Sony, they did a show there.
Yeah. So
that was
legendary nice. Show. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Brian, I loved hearing you say that you almost put Heat Seeker into your dream set list. And Wilkening, you made a good point, like near the end of your dream set list write up, when you said quite accurately something that we've kind of touched on throughout of this, is just how you could have easily put, you're capped at like 20 or 22 songs. You could have easily put another dozen songs that you would want to hear on top of that into the set list. And so some of the, you know, blow up your video songs and otherwise that we've been throwing around in the chat, like there's a lot of that stuff that any of us would love to, you know, pull out and put into an AC/DC set list. You know, it's just it's a rich body of work.
Wardlaw, I want to say one more thing. You mentioned something about some of their bluesier material not too long ago, and it just made me think of that really interesting collaboration that Brian Johnson and Slash did earlier this year, that Killing Floor cover, where Brian Johnson is singing in a register that is not nearly as common in the realm of AC/DC material. I think it would be really cool to see them revive and reinvent some of those older tracks from especially the Bon era that would fit that criteria. Stuff like The Jack or even Sin City. Things like that would be really fun. And also, you know what? While we're at it, I'm going to throw this gauntlet down. Bring back Big Balls one more time.
Yeah, he could do that.
And I love it. It always takes Brian to like just, you know, kind of get out the, shall we say, the kerosene and set some things on fire. So I appreciate you throwing that one in there. Like, for you guys, like, is there a song or songs that you've never seen AC/DC play, or perhaps one that they've never played that you would like to see them tackle on this upcoming tour? I mean, obviously, Brian, like, I mean, just throwing down a song like Heat Seeker, that's a good pick right there. But like, you know, what are some of kind of your holy grail songs? For me, like, it's a song like Big Gun from Last Action Hero soundtrack. Like, you know, so there's some fun little oddball, lesser heard tracks in their catalog that, like, I would love to see pop in the set list.
I don't know about oddball, but I would love to see a little more of the new album. And that's the first time I've said that about an AC/DC album in a long time. I think Power Up is their best album since Razor's Edge. Is that possible?
I agree. Yeah.
And normally it makes perfect sense. You do two or three songs, but I could go for, well, not that much more, but three or four. I'd look, the first three songs on that album are perfect. I would love to see them right in order because they're sequenced.
Yeah, you and I both had Realize in our set. I agree. I mean, I'd love to see Through the Mists of Time in the set list. Like, I don't know how you guys feel, like, and this is jumping a little bit, but like, I feel like the Power Up album got a little bit lost because of the pandemic, and I think that's a real shame. So it's like, to your point, Welcoming, I would love to see those songs get a second look. Like, that would be cool. I agree.
But admittedly, we're not in the majority on that opinion. I mean, I don't think anyone doesn't like it. I don't think people have the same concern about it that we do.
Yeah, you may be right. But I do think that AC/DC is one of those bands in that unique space where they have so many hardcore fans. And so many of their fans happen to be such diehards that they would probably embrace a couple extra songs from whatever their current album is that they're touring. I mean, we see the way that the Black Ice material has been embraced just in recent tours. Sure. And I think that there's no reason that Power Up wouldn't be received the same way if they played extra songs from it. I think it's interesting that for as popular as this album was, as many copies as it sold, and for however many years they've been using its title track as their encore, they hardly play any other material off for those about to rock. And I feel like there are so many other great songs on that record that they could play.
Agreed. Yeah. And what you said too, is like, just the idea that like we could all probably rest and not hear Thunderstruck. It's bonkers to me that they don't play Money Talks off of The Razor's Edge. So I think that there's a number of these things that you could make that case, but I absolutely agree, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, I could go on forever. I'm a crazy person. I love the instrumentals on Who Made Who. I mean, I could go, you know, Playing With Girls. I could go for half of Fly on the Wall. Think Shake Your Foundations. I mean, yeah, we could get on a jag and do that forever.
Do we think that this is really the end of AC/DC realistically? Like for Brian Johnson, perhaps, but if he were to step away, since Angus is nearly a decade younger, would Angus continue on and get another singer, Axel or otherwise, that could honor the legacy of both ears of the band? Like, how do you guys feel? Like, you know, if Brian's out, does this thing continue?
At this stage, why not? Right? I mean, and I don't say that to belittle Johnson or his contributions, but the singer is the hardest thing. He is a lot older. And everybody else has now been replaced except for him from the classic lineup. So it doesn't seem like that would be a deal breaker. He's not like he's the original. It's not like it's his brother, you know? His brother died and still carried on in his name, as he should. He built this band. He should do what he wants. But the thing that I wonder about is, where do they go? Like, they'll vanish for 3, 4, 5 years between records and tours. It's just like, they seem to love what they do, but then like, what else are they doing? Like, where does Angus Young go for 3 years? Lives in Switzerland, right? Is that what we think?
Yeah, I think that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, we know Brian basically gets wrapped up with cars, but yeah, that's a great question. What are they doing?
But yeah, you're like, well, if time is running short, you know, maybe you're going to have to circle back before 2028 or, I mean, it's great because it's such mystery around them. They don't explain anything. We don't know why, why am I blanking? We don't know why Phil Rudd is.
Yeah.
We can guess. We don't know. They won't explain. They won't say it's the end. I don't think we'll ever know. I don't think you'll get a farewell show. I think it'll just be over and you'll realize afterwards.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, certainly if they keep up the kind of touring schedule and breaks between tours that they've been doing recently, I don't see any way that they could do another tour with this lineup, or at least with Brian and Angus and the band together 6, 7, 8 years from now. I just, you know, the Rolling Stones are out there touring in their 80s, but it's a slightly different and less demanding style of thing that they're doing musically and performatively. I don't see how Brian Johnson could keep doing this into his 80s. It just doesn't seem feasible for any mere mortal. But yeah, I don't see any reason why they couldn't keep doing some version of AC/DC, whether it's one-off performances or some sort of all-star thing where they have multiple vocalists take a turn at different songs. I do think that as long as Angus is still kicking, he's going to want to continue his life's work. And yeah, I agree with Wilkening. It's his right to do that. He's been doing it for 50 years now. And yeah, I think it'll just take different forms.
I'm going to wrap things up here in a second, you guys. But something Wilkening said really touched on something I've been thinking about, which was just how these guys disappear for 3 or 4 years after whatever it is that they've been doing. And it's like, and as we kind of talked about, like this current Power Up record is so good. Like I am greedy. I would like to see one more record with Brian. And we know that apparently in the vaults, just from a riff and song idea perspective, they have no shortage of stuff that Angus has worked on over the years with Malcolm to draw on. Certainly, if this is where it wraps up, they're going out with a great record with Brian. And I really appreciate the fact that Brian got to get back on stage with the boys, as he calls them, and do one final lap with both, you know, an album and a tour, because all of that around the time that Axl took over during the Rock or Bust tour seems so unlikely. But yeah, if I could just have one greedy last choice, you know, if there are no more shows with AC/DC and Brian, but they still got back into the studio to crank out one more record, I think that would be cool. But, you know, it's almost like maybe it's best whatever course it takes, because again, this current record is such a strong AC/DC record. And already it's like, I don't know that anybody, you know, 10 years ago would have said, we're going to see a record, an AC/DC record of the magnitude that we got with Power Up. So I don't know how you guys feel about that.
Yeah, I agree about the record. And supposedly these riffs were left over from Black Ice.
Exactly.
Way back in the day. So then whatever team or person put the song arrangements together this time did a better job than they did back on Black Ice, in my opinion. So if there's a new team in place that can take their old riffs and do more of that, wow. I mean, great. Bring it on, you know? And it's going to be really funny when we talk about all this farewell talk in 20 years from now. We're all here looking back on their, you know, 2040 tour or whatever.
Yeah. Well, and sure. Angus is still moving better than us.
Buck walking around the stage. Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you guys. Well, thank you both. It's always a lot of fun talking music with you two. We will wrap things up there. As mentioned, each of us, alongside our UCR comrade Corey Irwin, put together our dream set list, and you can check that out as we speak at Ultimate Classic Rock. There you have it. Another episode of the UCR podcast is in the books. I am Matt Wardlaw. Thank you so much to all of you for listening. Please make sure to follow this podcast if you haven't, so you will get future episodes as they're released. And we'd appreciate it also if you would rate and review the podcast wherever you're listening. Look, we are all music fans, so if you enjoyed this, you can find a lot more at ultimateclassicrock.com, and we'll see you there.